And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Tuesday, March the 29th, 2016, 1:15 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Last Tuesday in March. Can you believe it? It is flying right by. We kick off April of this coming Friday. Did want to give you a programming note. Don't miss this program tomorrow because we've got a big 2 hours scheduled for you. Tomorrow during the 12 o'clock hour, we're going to be joined by legendary comedian Pat Cooper, member of the Friars Club for so many years. He's going to do one of his rare interviews tomorrow on this program. And if you haven't heard Pat Cooper, hold on to your seat. A very funny man with a lot to say. And then in hour number two tomorrow, we're going to be joined by legendary newsman, former announcer on The Tonight Show, co-host of The Today Show, and co-host of 2020, Hugh Downs, tomorrow to remember his friend Joe Garagiola, who sadly passed away last year at the age of 90. And also sad news today, Patty Duke, actress famous for her role on The Patty Duke Show, passed away at the age of 69, and Hugh Downs did an interview with her in the late 1980s on depression. So I'm sure we will talk about that with you tomorrow, as well as all current events and everything Donald Trump. Now, today is a special program as well. We're joined by a man who I haven't been joined by, I think, since December of last year, which is far too long because I love to have him on to talk about sports, but really anything, because this is a guy who knows a lot about a little and a lot about a lot. He is former HBO boxing analyst and one of the best guests in talk show history, a guy who spent some time in Trump buildings, Larry Merchant. Larry, how are you?
I'm good, Scott. I'm enjoying the sideshow. And by the way, I was a friend of Joe Garagiola as well, and worked with him on several occasions. And a terrific guy, and one of those lesser lights who was a greater light over his career.
Larry, what was it about Joe Garagiola that made him transition so easily onto a program like The Today Show, which then was strictly news?
Well, he was one of those people gifted with the philosophy that life is too serious to take seriously. And being a ball player, he saw the unserious side of life around him and laughed with it and about it. And, of course, his having grown up on the same street in St. Louis with Yogi Berra, he became his sort of biographer and telling stories about him and was a broadcaster and then went on the Today Show. I worked with him on a prize fight or two back in the day when we were at NBC. And he was just a guy who always had a smile on his face. And later in his career, he devoted a lot of time to trying to get ball players to give up smokeless tobacco because of its connection to cancer.
He was really in a very unique league all of his own. He really had a genuine presence on the television screen that a lot of former ball players who become broadcasters don't necessarily have. Joe Garagiola, I always felt, was different.
You know, Scott, my experience working in television primarily over the last 40 years is that guys like Garagiola are always on, and then they go on a set, and there's a camera that catches them when they're on. That's just who they are. You know, they make a production out of reading a menu when you go out to dinner with them. And Joe is just one of those gregarious characters, and somebody recognized it, and he became a baseball color man, and inside man, and people recognized he had more to say about life than just balls and strikes, and he became the host of the Today Show and a guy who was a star.
You know, Larry, I've been thinking baseball season is very close and we're all ready for spring, but we lost Yogi Berra in the last year. We have now lost Joe Garagiola. So many, it seemed like every team had a broadcaster not too long ago, Ernie Harwell and Harry Carey and Bob Uecker, who's still there, but we still have Vin Scully, but Jack Buck and these great people.
Bob Prince.
Absolutely, and who, I'm forgetting the gentleman, Red Barber, and Mel Allen,
yeah.
Who was great.
Yeah.
But we're losing.
Well, they were closely associated with their teams, which they generally stayed with for very long periods of time, just as star ball players used to, because of the economics of games at that time. Now the ball players seldom spend their entire careers or even most of their careers with one ball club.
What?
So, you know, things change, and it was you knew your announcer was rooting for your team, but the good ones gave you the full picture, and there's a certain familiarity with one-to-one familiarity with the fans. And they were the spokesmen for their teams, in a way.
Do want to touch on a little boxing here today, Larry, because there was a story in the BBC this morning that I thought was interesting for people who didn't catch it. Chris Eubanks says he told his son to avoid punching Nick Blackwell in the head to protect the stricken boxer. Blackwell, 25... is in an induced coma after losing his British middleweight title to Chris Eubank Jr. on Saturday. Between rounds 8 and 9, Eubank was heard urging his son to punch Blackwell's body rather than his face. Even in sparring, I'd tell Jr. to stay away from the head because his punching is fast, powerful, and dangerous. So most certainly I was saying this to protect the fighter. Now, Larry, of course, we think about Muhammad Ali and the problems he has now. Is this a very serious danger? Maybe even more so now with the fighters of today and their training than it was in Ali's day.
I don't think it's any more serious than it always has been. I once interviewed Nelson Mandela, who had been a successful amateur boxer. And I asked him how could he, as an advocate of peaceful protest, be such a boxing fan as he was. And he thought for a moment, and he said, well, because in boxing they do it voluntarily. I mean, we're going to hear more and more about that in football, that the athletes will be informed of the potential consequences, and if they want to play, then that will be up to them. There have been over the years a number of reforms in how boxing gives physical examinations to make sure the fighters are in shape. There have been reforms in where referees are instructed to stop a fight one punch too soon rather than one punch too late, if they can, in the heat of battle. But it's implicit in these very physical, very hard games that you're taking risks. There was a powerful story in the Sunday New York Times, by the way, about a fight that was held in Ohio between a young man from Youngstown, which of course is the source of several world champions, and a young man from Michigan, a Muslim, who were having their first professional fight. And it was about the stories of these two young men and how they happened to come to meet each other in their first fight, a four-rounder. And the Muslim kid from Michigan died. So that's baked into the risk and reward of prize fighting.
Is there anything that can be done, Larry, to curb this at all? In this fight, the father and coach was saying, don't punch him in the head.
I'm not sure there is. Boxing is not as raw as it once was. Spectators don't expect a fight to go until one of the fighters is in a pool of his blood, as was once the occasion, by the way. But it is what it is. In all the years I covered boxing for HBO, not when I was writing, we only had one fight that ended that way. I don't think I ever saw a fight that ended with death in the 20 years before that when I was writing a column. But every time it happens, and rightly so, we have to take a look. Now, there were a couple of famous fights on television. Out of the thousands and millions of fights on television, that also ended that way. Ray Mancini, when he killed a Korean fighter named Dakoo Kim, when Benny Perrette was killed by Emil Griffith. And people understand watching boxing that there are these perils, and it's one of the things that makes it the sport it was, and in some places still is.
Is there anything that the boxer himself can do? Because I look at a guy like Muhammad Ali, and I think a lot of that would have to be attributed to boxing, his current condition. But then I look at a guy like George Foreman, who was the oldest heavyweight champion of all time, and seems to have no problem like that.
Well, you know, sometimes it depends on some unholy combination of a fighter's status, the hopes that his team has for him. If he's losing a fight, maybe trying to get him to the end of the fight so that he's not knocked out and they keep him in there for too long. And that's a kind of corporate decision that it wouldn't look good on his record if he got knocked out. I always used to say it's up to the adults, meaning the corners and the officials, to stop a fight before it gets to that point. But sometimes a fighter is able to fight through hurt and more than hurt, doesn't want to give in because of his commitment to this game, his world, or because he doesn't know where he's at. because he's been trained to go as hard as he could. In the one death we saw at HBO, the young fighter who was from Colombia was trained by his father, and his father kept pushing him and pushing him and pushing him. And when it was all over, we saw tape of a parade for him back home in Colombia, and the father saying, "This is better than him dying in a drug rack."
If you have, because you covered Muhammad Ali's whole career,
what
do you think was the mistake? Because obviously by the...
Well, the mistake was a mistake that has been made over and over. It's a mistake being made by Roy Jones as we speak. Roy Jones has, obviously, some financial problems. And he'll go anywhere to fight. And in order to make a big purse by fighting in Russia, he had to become a Russian citizen. And he did. So there have been many examples of fighters living off their marquee names long after their skills have left them. And promoters who wanted to put them in and fans that wanted to still see them. And Ali, obviously, stayed at the party too long. Now, did he stay because of money? Did he stay because boxing was his life? It's how he defined himself. Did he stay because he loved being on the stage? I was at the George Foreman-Ken Norton fight in Venezuela many years ago. And it was the fight before that Foreman had to win in order for him to fight Ali. And Ali came down for the fight, and I was sitting in a kind of luncheonette at the hotel, and Ali sat down next to me and said, and because I think he was thinking of the potential consequences of a fight with Foreman, he said, "Do you think I'll be able to quit?" And what he was saying was he didn't know himself. He couldn't imagine his life without boxing. And there are always people around who will try to exploit that, including people who are close to him, including promoters, etc., including television.
When did you know he had went too long? What was the first fight you saw him in where you said, this is not the right Ali?
Well, the one that everybody, I think, would point to was the Larry Holmes fight. Larry Holmes had been a sparring partner of his. Larry Holmes was, I believe, then the champion. And because, you know, Ali was Ali, and Ali had done amazing things, and Ali thought he could still fight this guy. But I can remember doing a television show and saying Ali is going to get hurt in this fight. He has no chance in this fight. But he insisted, and over the years I've come to an understanding about these things that if an aging fighter can pass a rigorous physical and mental examination, and he wants to fight, then he has every right to fight. And I have every right not to watch him.
As a great follower, writer, broadcaster, journalist of sports, is it hard to see that?
You know, I loved Ali. I loved Joe Frazier, who I knew way back in the day in Philadelphia. And I felt that I loved them enough that it was their fate and destiny. And if that's how they want it to go out, I respected their right to do that.
Larry, lately it seems like the big punches have been thrown in the political world, oddly enough. What have you made of this whole political season that seemed to start last June? We've never really talked about it. What do you make of it? You have spent a lot of time in...
Well, either it's too serious to be funny or too funny to be serious or both. It's interesting to me that the comedians were the first ones that were able to tell the truth about it. And, you know, there's a mutual self-interest of the media because it's become a what's going to happen this time show rather than I've seen this show before. And everybody is prospering off of it. It's some kind of commentary on what's happening in the country that outsiders on both parties have somehow touched a nerve in different ways. And I find myself thinking I'm going to escape it and not have anything to do with it until results come in. But it's hard to sit down and have dinner with friends without it coming up. It's a kind of Jerry Springer show on the Republican side. He was a politician, right? Wasn't he the mayor of a city in Ohio at one time?
The mayor of Cincinnati.
There you go. And so you wonder what's going on in the country. Is it some kind of fear? Is it hoping for that they can elect a king who can save them economically and heroically in some fashion? I mean, you know, one of the interesting to me, Scott, is there have always been visionary business people who have become iconic figures in America, right?
Absolutely.
Ted Turner, Henry Ford, Rockefeller, Carnegie, and many, many others. But while many of them were involved in politics, the body politic didn't think that because you were a successful businessman that you could run a company, that proving you can run a company means you can run a country. They're two different things. But, you know, Donald Trump represents a kind of streak in America of the snake oil salesman, hustler, Barnum, and he's got half of the Republicans willing to join his parade.
Larry, the interesting thing as we sit here and watch this parade is, when Trump got in, we all knew in some way that it was going to be a little different. And yes, I think a lot of people feel the way you do. It's a circus show, it's snake oil salesmen, but not so many people bought the snake oil. The majority of people are buying this, and more people are turning out to vote Republican than they ever have before. What is it about this guy that's causing that?
Well, I think that, one, we never know what's going to come out of his campaign or his mouth next. So there's a certain fascination with that he's not talking politics talk. I think also that he's touched on a lot of fears and a lot of things that conservatives believe but wouldn't say out loud. I recall seeing there was one of the Comedy Central shows did a produced piece in which they showed him saying what seemed like outrageous stuff, building a wall across the southern border, and so on. And then they compared that or matched that with prominent Republicans who had said the same thing. John McCain walking across the border and along the border in Texas when he ran for president, saying we have to build a wall here. And other of the major issues, and so he represents something. We've seen the Tea Party over the last 8 years rise up against Obama. We've seen Republicans say from day one that their mission was to stop him doing everything. So there is a real fracture in the way the system has worked in the past, although there are plenty of examples of where the system didn't work in the past. We tend to have short memories about that. And meanwhile, this independent, progressive politician from Vermont touched a nerve by promising everybody to, you know, free college and free medical and all those other really good things. And so he's got a lot of young, it's an aspirational message that the young have hooked on to, and the more mature people know is aspirational and may take a century to reach. And so it's a kind of free-for-all. I kind of think that the Republicans will stop Trump.
Well, we have added interest with that, Larry, because the convention's right up the road in Cleveland here.
Right, and, you know, they're going to make that big effort in Wisconsin, and my guess is they'll be successful there, but it's just a guess. And if they can't stop him, then congressmen and senators will separate themselves from him. A big dollar backers will pour their money into Congress and the Senate. But one way or another, I think he won't be supported. But maybe that's just conventional wisdom, and maybe they'll make a ticket with Trump and Kasich and surprise everybody.
Now, that being said, Larry, just for the fact that the Republicans have come out with this Never Trump movement, and so many of them have jumped on board with it. Either way they go, whether he does get the nomination in Cleveland or he doesn't, have they handed this election to Hillary Clinton?
That seems to be the conventional wisdom. But I really don't know. I think one of the really weird things about a Clinton election would be both sides galvanized because they don't like the other side more than that they like their own side. Republicans can't stand Hillary for whatever their reasons are. I've never been able to really glean exactly what it is. And except that Republicans don't think Democrats have any right to be president. And there are plenty of people who will be galvanized to get into the fray because they think Trump is not fit to be the leader of the free world.
I started out this interview by saying, Larry, you've spent a lot of time in buildings that have Trump names on them.
I've spent time around them.
Okay, this is a good question. Who is the real Donald Trump? You've been with the man. Is he this guy we see?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I guess you can say it's to his credit that he hasn't tried to disguise who he really is. He's one of those massive ego star businessmen and a great self-promoter who comes out of the great American tradition of a blowhard and a snake oil salesman. You wonder, with all those people who wanted to run for, who did start out running for presidency, what were there, 17 of them?
Mm-hmm.
In the Republican side, that none of them seemed presidential. Maybe Kasich did. Whether his record will attract enough people and so forth, but Cruz scares me more than Trump does. He comes across to me as sinister. Brilliant, sinister, a guy who would go as far to move America as far toward a theocracy as he could. So we have these extreme personalities, and decisions have to be made.
Larry, maybe the most interesting question is, since you have spent time around Donald Trump, yes, Republicans have said things about walls, and even inadvertently, and maybe sometimes advertently, said things about Muslims. But the things Donald Trump, he called the Pope disgraceful. He says horrible things about women, fat pigs and disgusting. He didn't know what the KKK was, or so he said. He attacks Ted Cruz's wife on her looks alone. Who is a Donald Trump voter who can look at that and say, hey, that's my guy? Because there are a lot of them right now.
Well, it seems that it's gotten to the point where, every knock is a boost. Every misstatement of fact is a fact. And there are people who have gut reactions on why they like them, and whether it has something to do, with our fears about the economy or our fears about the world situation. Make America great again. I think America's pretty great right now. We're not marching on anybody. We're not having celebrations of great victories and mourning thousands of deaths. The employment numbers seem better and better. The economy is healthy relative to what's going on in the world. But people may want something else. They may want somebody who can assure them and somebody who is hotter than Obama as a personality and figurehead, who is more emotional and constantly reassures us about how terrific we are, even if we're not, even if governors are cutting expenses by closing schools and firing teachers and so on. There's some mood, and maybe it's magnified by 24/7 news coverage and social media. I mean, I have a granddaughter in Paris who has never uttered a political word to me. She's going to school there. And when I spoke to her a couple weeks ago, she said, "I just send $10 to Bernie Sanders." And I went to a wedding over the weekend and sat next to a Marine who was a major and told me he was a Republican. But he voted for Bernie Sanders because he thought that he didn't want Clinton to win the Democratic nomination because he thought she'd be the hardest one to beat. So there's stuff going on out there that I can't explain and just have to run with the moment.
On day one of the presidency, you get the nuclear codes. You know Donald Trump. Do you want him with those codes?
No. And here's the thing. What a president says often matters. What a president says may, for example, affect the stock market. What a president says in terms of international relations can cause conflict. So you want somebody who's smart and informed and measured and knows when, you know, when to hold them and when to fold them. You know, it's one thing to say you're a good negotiator and then to tell you what the end result you want in the negotiation. It's another thing to know how to negotiate to get the best deal you can. So I still can't imagine. A, I think the Republicans are going to do everything they can in the remaining states where there will be elections, and B, I think they'll do everything they can at the convention either to stop him or to separate themselves from him. And then I think that the country will reject him in an election, but I also see that there are a lot of people who, as many people who maybe who don't like Hillary as who are somehow connecting themselves to him.
It's going to be very interesting here in Ohio in late July when this convention comes, because something's going to happen there, and I'm not exactly sure, good, bad, or ugly, what's going to happen, but it's going to be one of the more interesting conventions of all time.
A friend of mine who's fairly well connected in Washington told me 2 months ago that the so-called smart people in Washington, and there are a lot of smart people, they may not be able to see the future clearly, but they're smart and they know things, thought that either Romney and or Ryan would emerge again to save the party somehow. Now, maybe it could be Kasich, you know, a convention in his state as a meeting point between Cruz and who is apparently as disliked as any politician, and Trump. What are your feelings about Kasich as a presidential or vice presidential figure?
You know, I think as a vice presidential figure, he would be ideal because the Republicans have to win Ohio. The Democrats really don't, but the Republicans have to. But the thing on the national stage they're not saying about Kasich that we all know as we live in Ohio is he keeps talking about how he created these jobs and created this surplus, but he did that by taking money away from the counties and closing certain schools and privatizing the prisons. So it's the things he says, he comes...
And also the automobile business.
Yeah, and he also got lucky with fracking here in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So he's an interesting politician because he comes across very mild compared to Trump and Cruz, but he's also the guy in Ohio who tried to get rid of the teachers, police, and firefighters unions about 3 years ago.
Right.
So he's not really a moderate guy.
No, he's a look, moderate is between extremes. And maybe it'll turn out to be lucky that he has two guys who are viewed as extremists or unlikable for one reason or another. And he's played his hand as well as I guess it could be. So I'm as curious as the next fellow, but I'm getting a little bit... overextended in terms of watching the minute-by-minute coverage.
I think you're right. It's interesting, too, with Kasich. The one thing you never hear on the national level is, yes, he's only won one state, and yes, there's no possible way he can have the votes by convention time, but he has spent, I think at this point, over $2 million of Ohio taxpayer money running a campaign that he can't win, which kind of annoys people here in the state.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think the party will do what the party can under the rules of engagement. But you wonder if they can offend all of the people who are marching behind Trump if they don't do something with him. And he comes out with the most, quote, votes from the primaries. And how that will affect them. Whether a decision will be made, let him run, we won't support him, we'll get the Senate back, we'll get the Congress back, we'll have control of the Supreme Court, and 2 out of 3 ain't bad, as they have shown.
A lot riding on the line as we head into November. And Larry, I know you have some relation here in Ohio, so you might want to show up in Cleveland in July because we might need some post-fight interviews.
Well, we live in an amazing country in an amazing time.
Absolutely. Larry Merchant, the absolute pro and professional. Larry, I hope we talk again very, very soon. Stay well.
Anytime, Scott.
Bye-bye. Well, Mr. Craycraft over there, what did you think of that interview with a few minutes left in the program?
It was interesting.
Speak your piece.
It was interesting.
Now, Larry Merchant called Donald Trump a snake oil salesman and a blowhard. And he's met the man. Have you met Donald Trump?
I have not.
So would he be more qualified than you?
To a certain extent, yes.
Yes. So how do you feel now? By the way, we'll take a phone call if you want to call in. If anybody's got an opinion on that, we have time for one phone call. 740-383-9944. What did you think of Larry Merchant's opinion on Trump? Go ahead, Kraft.
No, I think you know, it was very interesting. He did say that he's better than the Cruz. That's pretty good. I like that.
But he didn't really... He said, if I... Would I have Donald Trump's finger on the nuclear button?
He said no. But, you know, come on. That's his opinion.
Well, yeah, but why would Larry Merchant lie? He's met the man.
Well, yeah, I know he met the man, but...
Didn't you say too long ago you think he's more calm in private?
I thought so.
What did Larry just say?
He said no.
So what does that make?
Well, it's fine. I mean, I'm still going to vote for him 100%.
Well, how come... You see, this is the problem with Trump voters. How come you can't be put off of him? No matter what he does, it doesn't matter. That's the problem.
Because...
Isn't there a line that he can cross...
He's not really crossed in my book. That
I'll tell you this. I'm not saying this is who I'm gonna try. I'm gonna use a. Okay, let's say I supported Bob Dole years ago. Okay, if Bob Dole had come out and called women fat pigs and said he didn't know what the KKK was, see, that would have been a line for me that he would have crossed. If he had called the Pope disgraceful. Even though I wanted Bob Dole, I would have to draw back from him because I would say, wait a second, I don't support that. I don't support calling the Pope disgraceful. I don't support calling women fat pigs. I don't support making fun of war veterans. Why is there no line this man can cross? What does he have to do, run over little kids in the street?
Well, no, we need somebody that's going to...
Make America great. Yeah. I think America's pretty great already.
Well, that's what everybody says, but it's not.
Well, what's wrong with America?
We're still
unemployment's lower than it's been in 8 years.
Our deficit's way up.
Our deficit has been way up since the 1980s. Nobody's going to knock the deficit down. How are you going to knock the deficit down when you're paying cops to throw out all the illegal immigrants and building up the army?
Donald Trump can make it level.
Yeah, I bet he can. Bet he can.
He's going to bring jobs back.
A lot of people voted for George W. Bush, too.
Listen,
would you vote for him again?
No.
Why not?
No. He's the one to cause all this mess.
And you don't think Donald Trump can cause a mess like this?
Well, maybe.
Give him the nuclear codes on day one and see what happens.
We got to give him a benefit of the doubt.
We have. And then he called women fat pigs, and then he said he didn't know what the Ku Klux Klan was.
He wasn't talking about all women.
And they made fun of Ted Cruz's wife. He planted a story in the National Enquirer. He made fun of a Vietnam vet. He called the Pope disgraceful. I think we've given him the benefit of the doubt many, many times.
All I can say is he's going to make America great. He's going to bring back jobs. He's going to bring the jobs that went overseas back to America.
I wonder what the house prices are in Canada right now.
I don't know.
You might want to check it out. And this program is over for this day. This is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
At www.wwgh1071.com. They discuss topics of the day and take your calls at 740-